All right, welcome to the Jews Priestcast. My name's Jeff, and I am joined today by a special guest, Matt. He is a old school metalhead. He has been around, and I believe I've attended 15 to 20 concerts with him without even knowing it, because I grew up in the same area, and we enjoyed the same bands, and we crossed paths, but this is the first time I'm actually ever speaking to him live in person. So, Matt, introduce yourself. Tell us about you.
Well, I was born in Buffalo, moved to LA in 1991. A couple years later, found myself in the music business doing publicity in A&R for Metal Blade, and then went on to do it for Century Media and Noise Records. Around 05, 04, I kind of got out of the business and kind of just moved on to regular life and moved out of the city, didn't go to shows or anything, got married, didn't go to shows for like 10 or so years, took a decade off after, 30 years of going to every show I could possibly go to. And then, now my kids are kind of grown up a little and I can, I don't feel like I'm abandoning my wife to two crazy kids all night if I go out to shows. So I've been going out a lot more again.
Awesome. Yeah, I've seen you posting on Twitter about that and Twitter and posting on YouTube. Some of your videos, they're really cool.
Matt, a couple of videos per show. I don't sit there with my hand up in the air the whole time. At the same time, a lot of people criticize, I'm not at this point in my life, I'm not going to be doing any mosh pits, and I'm never been the craziest anyways, and I'm a little too self-conscious, so I might as well video a couple of songs.
Makes sense to me. Some memories for it.
Yeah.
Matt is All American Headbanger on Twitter. And shit, I've been following you. You've been following me for a couple of years now.
Probably, yeah. That was right. I found you right when I got on Twitter. Twitter does, it had done a great job of matching up people. I find so many people close to my same age, same interests. And it, like you walking in the same footsteps, probably elbowed each other a few times in a crowded club or something.
Yeah, no kidding. What I actually don't know, what is your opinion of Judas Priest?
They're my top three bands: Metallica, Iron Maiden, Judas Priest.
Cool.
I like every era of them. I don't, I'm not like you. I don't hate Turbo. Legendary Turbo there.
Yep. Did you saw a fight in like 94, 95, right?
Yeah, that was at the Palace in Hollywood.
So that is a concert we were at together. I saw him twice. I saw him at the Palace and I saw him at UC Irvine at like the Brent events. No, it wasn't even that big. It was like Crawford Hall. Tiny little place.
Okay.
Yep.
Hold on one second. Devin is coming. Yeah, I got to send a voicemail. It's too late.
So our original plan was to have a guy. How do you say Devin's last name? Reiki?
Reich?
Cool. Devin Reich from the band Anubis on. It's a band that actually Matt introduced me to. And it's I am not the biggest power metal fan. It has its place, and sometimes I really, really like it. But I often need a little bit more, less polish with my power metal. And Anubis does a great job of mixing in some, grittier aspects to power metal.
When we were talking about Judas Priest here, I hear like old school Priest in them, more directly as opposed to that, the classical European style power metal. They got more of that grit. I know Judas Priest is a European band, but I think of, when I think of them, it's more the American style grit to them as opposed to that, Yngwie classical style that you hear a lot in other bands.
Yeah.
Or Painkiller sound, I guess.
Yeah. painkiller is definitely a. It's not as British sounding as, say, Peace of Mind or Sabbath or something. They still sound British.
Yeah. You know, Devin, what I like about that, Devin has a very distinct voice. He, you know, a lot of power metal bands have a very, there's a very generic power metal voice out there. And Devin's been developing slowly, really into his own sound. You hear some of, they have a couple of self-released EPs, and you can kind of hear the evolution where he did kind of have, I don't want to say generic, but he did have more of a plain sound to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when so I was going through some of the older stuff, obviously the Tornado of Souls cover caught my attention. How is a power metal vocalist going to try and copy Dave Mustaine or, you know, pull that off? And they did. It was impressive. But yeah, he did. The newer album has two songs off of it that are, I don't want to say more aggressive, but that's what I keep on going back to. It sounds more aggressive. There is not growling, not death metal vocals, but there is some raspiness to Devin's performance that is different. It's ear catching.
They also did Symbolic by Death on there, and he really pushed the vocals on that too. There's like a rasp in there, and it's also melodic, and I don't know how he does it. He just really bellows it out, I guess.
Yeah. Hopefully he's not doing anything, only any damage to his vocal cords.
I think he has some training or someone that works with him from time to time. So I don't think he's messing it up too badly.
Cool. All right.
Excuse me while I drink my kvass.
Nice. I'm just drinking a Coke. It's too late at night for me.
Yeah.
How did you get hooked up with, was it Metal Blade first, then Century Media?
Yeah, it was Metal Blade. It was Metal Blade. So actually, I started at Restless Records as an intern, and then the Mailroom. And while I was doing that, they had like a couple of smaller metal records there, mostly like college rock at the time, but had a death metal band called Cancer,
uh-huh.
A band called Mind Over Four, which is kind of like a grunge power metal band.
Okay, that's a weird combo.
Yeah, no, they're a unique sounding band. So I worked a couple of those. And then I met a guy named Marco Barbieri, who was A&R at Metal Blade and publicity. I had done a fanzine at the time. And he talked to him, and I went over to Metal Blade as an assistant. Then he went to Century Media, and I took over for him. And then after a while at Century Media, he was made label manager, and then I went over to Century Media with him.
And that's really cool.
Yeah. So while at Century Media, he got a deal with Noise Records, where they had been open. This was probably, I want to say, late 90s. They had been open in, you know, the U.S. for at least a decade. I'm not sure, like probably the late 80s, they opened up an office.
Mm-hmm.
And they had never made money. They had just keeping it open just to
a vanity project type thing.
Yeah. So
I enjoy it.
A band's not going to sign with you if you can't get your record out in the U.S. Right. So they did that. And then Marco said, well, we'll take care of it. We'll put a point person to run Noise Records basically, but we'll put it through our machinations, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So first there was a guy named Steve Joe doing it. And then Steve moved on, and then they promoted me to it. And actually during that time, they finally, for the first time ever, Noise Records was making money.
Oh, that's awesome.
And at one point, though, because of that, I think they actually sold it out to Sanctuary. So Sanctuary bought it, and, you know, of course, Sanctuary then in turn got sold out not long after that. But yeah, that was, that kind of ended the deal. After that, I went freelance for a while. Saw just magazines going. This was in the early 2000s, and it was kind of bummed me out. No magazines around anymore. It was all online, and it just wasn't the same for me. I didn't, you know, I just wasn't enthusiastic about it. So that's when I moved on.
Mm-hmm. Seems like a good idea. Good timing on it.
Yeah, it worked out. I got a job now. It's a regular job, but God, I make, like, you know, three times more money than I ever did in the music business.
Yeah. Now you can pay to go to concerts on your own. You don't need your credentials to get you in.
I joke about it. It's like all the stuff I got for free, but now I make more money, but it just ends up being spent on the stuff I got for free.
That's hilarious. All right. So, what's your metal story? What was the band that got you into metal in the first place?
The Osmonds?
I don't think so.
No.
I think you're joking.
Kinda. So, I had an older sister. She had one of those briefcase-style record players, and she had a couple of 7-inches that I loved, and one was Crazy Horses by the Osmonds, and I Was Made for Loving You by Kiss. And I, you know, to me, there was no difference, which maybe says a lot about that Kiss record, but...
I don't see any difference either.
Yeah.
As the Kiss Army comes and kills me.
There's Devin. Wait. Devin. Yeah.
What up? Hey, Devin, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
I'm doing well. So I was in the middle of talking to Matt.
What up, Matt?
What up, Deb?
And we were just talking about his metal story, and it involved the Osmonds for some reason.
The Osmonds or the Osbournes?
The Osmonds, Donnie and Marie.
All right.
So, if you want to save this podcast from going downhill and maybe talking about the Nelson twins or some shit.
Oh. Nelson twins. I don't think I know who they are.
I was about to take you on where that went from there. Okay. So I was listening to those two singles. And then my brother came home with Number of the Beast. I heard Vincent Price, and I said, forget those two singles. This is what I'm up. It was Maiden from there on out.
Nice.
Much better. That's a big improvement.
So you see, you gotta hear the full story.
Yeah, okay. Devin, no, I think we should just cut it off at the end. You found the Osmonds, and you were set from there.
Yeah.
All right. So let me introduce Devin. Devin is the vocalist for Anubis. And
hello. I'm so sorry I'm late, by the way.
Oh, it's not a problem at all. We had mentioned earlier, or me and Matt were talking about Anubis, and I have done some listening to the band, and although I'm not a giant power metal fan, because for the most part, power metal tends to be a little too clean, a little too polished for my tastes, your band Anubis hits that sweet spot where it still has some nastiness, some grit, some grime to it. And I think a lot of that has to do with your voice, because you throw in some raspy and growly shit.
You know, the album has actually been getting a lot of reviews. We'll get exactly an 8, and the very first sentence of the review will be, I usually don't like power metal, but this is cool.
Oh, wow.
So, I kind of feel like we've earned the tag, power metal for people that don't like power metal. I'll take it. I mean, I don't know. I guess to me, like when I hear power metal, I hear like this is something that's supposed to evolve into something heavier. That's just kind of where my mind goes.
They usually go into AOR rock after a while.
Yeah. And I kind of I'm really surprised that evolution hasn't happened yet. Like the very first power metal band I ever got into was Iced Earth. They're probably one of, if not the heaviest power metal band that's ever existed. I'm really surprised that sort of angle of it never took off more.
Yeah, Iced Earth, I mean, obviously now they've got, there's no way held on listening to him, but Stu Block is an incredible vocalist. He's another power metal vocalist that throws a bit more grit into it.
Yeah, so. And Matt Barlow, too. Pretty much every vocalist they've ever had is, like, god tier.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. Fuck John Schaefer. Yeah. No arguments there.
Correct. All right. You did a cover of Symbolic, and I know Matt had sent me some links to some of the pre-release material, and I lost that email, and that is one song I really want to hear. How did that, why did you choose that song? How did that come about? How does it sound?
I guess, so that song came about because I've always wanted, you know, you get a lot of, like, death metal covers of non-death metal songs. You get, like, Arch Enemy covering Aces High. You get, you know, tons of Maiden covers with the growling vocals, but you've never, with the exception of Sabaton covering Amon Amarth, you never get melodic singers covering death metal songs and, you know, doing clean vocals over it. And I just kind of feel like Symbolic is just one of those songs. It's just such a staple of the genre, and at the same time it's got enough melodic quality to it to where, like, it's not trying to make a melodic song out of Hate Eternal or, you know, Chrissian or any of the really brutal shit. And I don't know, I also kind of feel like, since, you know, Chuck Schuldiner was always about the, like, unification between all the genres, you know, he was always about, like, you know, you can listen to Venom and Manowar and, like, Morbid Angel and all this shit. And I, you know, and eventually he did do a quote power metal album, although it doesn't really, it's more like melodic metal, but, like, so, you know,
the Control Denied album.
Yeah. The Fragile Art of Existence. So I just figured that, like, that would be a really ideal song to try that experiment on with.
Are you satisfied with the results? Well, I guess you would have shit-canned it if you weren't satisfied.
I wouldn't release it if I wasn't satisfied. Yeah, I am. I'm actually surprised it hasn't gotten more pushback. I think we got one review where the only negative thing he says is, like, yeah, I'm not really sure that this death cover is working for me. And, you know, to me, that's completely understandable. Like, yeah, that is a perfectly valid opinion to hold. But in general, actually what surprises me the most about it is how many people don't realize that it's a cover, and just sort of, like, the, I don't want to say mental gymnastics, but just the elaborate process one would have to go through to arrive at how you would think of writing a melodic metal song like that. Because it is very unlike anything you would hear in power metal, traditional heavy metal. Like, you know, this is the kind of song that could only be a progressive death metal song that somebody covered with clean vocals. And it's just so wild to hear people like, oh, they're doing all these weird experiments in this one song. And you really never heard Symbolic before? Like, that riff, that opening riff is fucking iconic. Like, you don't recognize the riff? That's cool.
Yeah.
I love the opening line in it. I don't mean to dwell, because the previous album, death album, was all the songs was Chuck venting on people.
yes it was,
you know. He's basically
dunking on fucking his old guitar players and his old
Orivor Kurgan. All these people. So the first line is, I don't mean to dwell. It always, you gonna sit on some more people now, or?
Yeah, I mean, he seemed like, I obviously never knew him, but he seemed like somebody who is very capable of self-reflection. Like, you do not go from Scream Bloody Gore to Human in three albums if you are not willing to, like, let yourself grow. So, you know, I I can see him like being really mad and writing a really angry album where he calls out all these people he knows and then taking a step back and, you know, maybe I shouldn't dwell on things so much.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. That's all just speculation.
We were talking about your vocals earlier, how they're like melodic yet kind of raspy and pushed. And I don't want to make assumptions, but do you have a vocal coach or anybody that kind of helps you from tearing up your throat, basically?
I had a vocal coach for my first year. Then I moved to the opposite side of the country that she was on. I really should have continued doing Skype lessons with her. She's a very, very, very good coach. I learned a lot from her. I bought a program. Have either of you guys heard of Ken Tamplin?
I have not.
No.
Okay, he's kind of, like, if you look for vocal coach or like vocal lessons on YouTube, he's like all the fuck over it. He's pretty much the go-to like metal guy for voice lessons. And I didn't see a teacher when I used this program. I pretty much just taught myself off it. But he's obviously very, very much tailored his program to like to doing the really big, powerful stuff and not hurting your voice. But no, as far as like the raspiness, I'm pretty much, that's just something I've always been able to do, sort of. I think it comes from just like imitating the Fonz when I was younger, you know. yeah, I don't know. For some reason, I've just always been able to do that without hurting myself, and it's just come very naturally. I think like the generally accepted piece of wisdom is, if your throat hurts, that's okay, but if you're hoarse, that's not okay. So I've just kind of sculpted my way through it. Like that way, like, yeah, okay, this hurts my throat, but that's fine, and I'll get over that. But if I'm making myself hoarse by doing something, then that means I should not do what I'm doing.
That makes sense. Seems logical. So, who are your personal vocal influences? What led you to becoming a singer?
Number one, Matt Barlow from Ike's Turf, which is unfortunate, but at least he was with the band back when
they were acceptable.
They were sane, not just acceptable, but like they sometimes wrote about their beliefs in the early days, and their beliefs were completely, totally fine.
Yeah.
Like, you know, listen to the song Consequences. Like, that is a fantastic song where, you know, very opinionated, but you know, that is a completely wonderful song. Then he left, and then eventually Schaefer went fucking insane.
It was all like, they had a lot of anti-Christo fascist, you know. I have a tour somewhere that says burning down the Bible Belt.
I mean they always came from a very like anti-religious perspective, which, you know, especially during the Clinton and Bush years, you know it doesn't take a, you don't have to go very far to go from religion is harmful to like the religious right are harmful. Don't know. I think it was 9/11 that really,
it was.
Yeah, I think right after then that's where you get the, like the America album and the song, When the Eagle Cries, which in my opinion has the distinction of being both the single worst metal song ever written and the worst post 9/11 song ever written.
A
truly, truly phenomenally bad song. Like, just wow. Like, amazing. Anyways, off the subject. So him, Hansi Kirsch from Blind Guardian.
The God himself.
Yes. Yes. AKA God. Russell Allen from Symphony X. To some extent, I'm also very influenced by like punk vocalists like Jello Biafra, Joe Shithead from DOA. Very influenced by like soul singers like Ben E. King and Gene Chandler, those kind of guys. Yeah, kind of all over the place. Like you're mentioning that I'm grittier than most power metal singers. Could just be my punk rock background, but I kind of never, as much as I love the, you know, Michael Kiskes and the Tobias Sammets of the world, like I never really saw that as something that I was interested in doing or imitating.
You follow more the Kai Hansen, not the Kiske.
I mean, between the two of them, yeah, absolutely. But I mean, I'm talking more like I really liked the fucking like really gritty guys like Matt Barlow, Russell Allen, Jorn Land, et cetera, et cetera. I adore Kiske. Like, he's one of my favorite vocalists, hands down. Just, I never really, like, I never heard him and thought, I want to do that.
Mm-hmm. Heartless and hollow. Heartless, you leave the flock to the fair. Heartless, you'll always be until the reaper comes to take your heartbeat away. We'll be right back. yeah, so you hit some of the major power metal tent poles with Blind Guardian, yeah. Halloween. So how did Anubis, well, first off, where did the name Anubis come from? Because the first thing I thought of when Matt told me that that was the band name, I thought of the Tad Morose song, which has an incredible fucking riff.
Don't think I've heard that song. I think I will listen to it as soon as we're done here. But I think Septic Flesh also has a song called Anubis.
Okay.
But to answer your question, it came from our first guitar player. I was very, very stringent on band names, despite the fact that every metal band name has been used already, and you really need to not worry about it because you will drive yourself insane by taking names too seriously. But basically, my criteria was, one, if possible, it should start with an A, because that way it'll top any alphabetized lists. Uh-huh. Two, it should probably be three syllables, because it is very easy to chant in a crowd.
Anubis, Anubis.
Anubis, yeah. And three, it should not enter... It should not end in Ator or Ation. Because we were kind of like, you know, when we started I feel like that's when the whole like thrash revival thing was kind of starting to die down a little bit. Like, I think we were kind of reaching the point where every single possible idea in thrash that can ever be used for the rest of eternity has been used. So I didn't want to commit myself too much to being like, yeah, we're devastator or like, you know, extermination or you know, no offense to any bands out there that might have those names. I might even know some bands with those names, and it was definitely not intended to call them out, but you know, our first guitar player just kind of came up with that name, and I arrived at practice one day and our drummer looked at me and he was like, we're Anubis, because we'd obviously been, you know, going back and forth about a name for weeks at that point.
Yeah. Did you know the Anubis, the Egyptian god, or I think that's
of course.
It's Egyptian god. Okay, good.
Yeah, yeah. The Egyptian god of like death and the underworld. Yeah. Yeah. I've always been a big mythology guy. Like obviously since I'm a metal guy, like Norse mythology is my big focus, but like I've pretty much dabbled in every, you know, mythology, that I can get my hands on. So I actually didn't like the name all that much at first, because I thought it was kind of like nasally sounding, Anubis. But I think it's a perfectly fine name. It's you know, iconic, it's recognizable, there's only about seven other bands that have it as their name. That's that story.
Very cool.
I always think of the Merciful Fate song Egypt.
Yeah, I think one other downside to it is, like, you know, I was the only member from that lineup that's still in the band, and like we're getting lots of ideas like, yeah, our logo should be like on a piece of papyrus, and you know, it should be the desert, and I was just kind of like, you know, like I can do the name, but I don't want to be an Egyptian themed band like Nile. Like, Nile knows Egypt better than I will ever know any subject for as long as I live. I don't think anything good lies at the end of that road.
So we're not going to expect a Walk Like an Egyptian cover coming from you.
I've never thought about that before. I don't actually know that song all that well. To me, the B-52s were always budget Devo.
Well, this is I think it's Bananarama that did Walk Like an Egyptian.
Was it Bananarama? I could have sworn it was the B-52s. I don't know. I have no fucking idea. But
B-52s being budget Dio, that's fucking incredible. No, that is budget amazing.
Budget Devo.
Budget what?
Devo.
Yeah, that's what I said. B-52s being budget Devo. That's hilarious. That's amazing. Dio.
Yeah.
Oh, God, no.
Yeah, I was gonna say, yeah, that.
Yeah.
But I'll listen to it and with that in mind. I don't know. Maybe I could see doing a cover of that.
Awesome. Your new album, Dark Paradise. Did I say it right? Okay, good.
Yes.
It has a song on it called Princess of Dark Paradise.
Priestess
of the Dark Paradise.
Yeah.
Has a progressive flavor to it, dude.
Does it really? I wasn't the primary songwriter on that, but to me that kind of just has a basic like Iron Maiden-y kind of like 6/8 kind of feel, like a Die With not Die With You, but the first song on that album,
Aces High,
Where Eagles no. Dare.
Yes.
Yeah, just kind of like, yeah, to me it's just kind of like basic trad heavy metal. Prog works.
Well, I mean, the music I mainly listen to is doom, so everything's prog.
Oh, okay. Sure.
Yeah, if it goes if it's 6'8", wow, that's way too fast. Fuck it.
Yeah.
So, is the songwriting evenly? Are you just strictly the lyricist, or do you actually write the? Because you're a musician too. I mean, obviously all singers are musicians, but you are a bass player and a guitarist yourself.
Yeah. I was much more of a guitarist than I am now. Like, I haven't played in. I could not. Anyone you meet could play circles around me at this point. Like, I can barely, like, keep up with anything on guitar. I basically know just well enough to write and record demos. If I, you know, time compress everything and edit it to fucking hell and back. But I don't consider, but yeah, to answer your question, I would like the songwriting to be as equal as possible. I think I still do the majority. I would say that I do about 50% of the writing, but that is just because I write nonstop. Like there's pretty much the general attitude is just when you have songs, like, show them, and you know, they immediately go into the pipeline. You know, theoretically, there's nothing that would stop, like, any one member from just bringing 15 songs to the table, and then, like, all right, that's our next year and a half right there. But, you know, I'm just constantly writing. Like, I'm never in a state where I don't have, like, three or four songs in some stage of, like, within kicking distance of being done.
That's really cool. Do you have a particular writing process, or is it just kind of like it comes as it comes?
It comes as it comes. I mean, like obviously since at this point I'm a vocalist first and an instrumentalist far second. These days I start with a vocal melody, and kind of write around that. Back when I was more of a guitar player, it would be the opposite. I'd start with riffs and then, you know, obviously I've still got songs that are left over from that period. And really it's just, you know, I don't control the creative process. The creative process controls me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you touring or plans to tour?
We have our first, technically second, but the first one was kind of doesn't count. We have our first mini tour coming up in like a week and a half. I think, oh God, I need to get ready for that. that's kind of what this next sort of chunk of time is. We're kind of finishing up album two gradually behind the scenes. But really, like, what I'm focusing most of my energy on is sort of DIY, putting together mini tours. And just getting the footprint out of state. So like we've got a couple West Coast dates coming up, and later in the summer we've got like a couple Texas dates, and then I'm trying to get us some dates in between here and there, and then like in June I think we're doing another West Coast thing. So like, yeah, booking tours is definitely not anything I've ever done or anything I've ever assumed that I could do, but it's going all right so far. I mean, we've got stuff to show for it. I think right now it's just getting the name in front of people who have not borne witness to it yet.
Mm-hmm. So not coming anywhere on the East Coast.
Not yet. I would really, really like to. I think we submitted ourselves to a festival in Massachusetts. I don't know where you are on the East Coast. Man, I would Tampa. Really, really like. Huh?
Tampa.
Oh, Tampa. Yeah. I would really, really love to play the East Coast. I hope that can happen soon. That's probably the most I can say at this point. I'm sure it will.
Totally fine. If you come out here, I'll be there.
Awesome. Fuck yeah, dude.
All right. So This is the Judas Priest cast, and I've talked briefly to Matt about it. Matt's being there nice and quiet for this entire time. But what is your Priest story? What do you like about them? What albums are your favorites? How'd you get into it?
My favorite album is Defenders of the Faith. I love that album. I did a vocal cover a couple years ago of Jawbreaker, and I want to do a real full band cover of it because I feel like I do that song really well. So when I was in my really formative stages, I was far more of a Maiden person because the only album I got of theirs was a Greatest Hits album, which in my opinion, now knowing Priest the way I do, didn't really showcase them as well as I would have liked.
I agree completely.
Do you know the Greatest Hits album I'm talking about?
Maybe not, but I don't look at the songs I like by Priest are almost always the deep cuts. I don't ever want to hear Heading Out to the Highway or Breaking the Law ever again.
I really like Heading Out to the Highway, but mostly the live version that was on the album I had, because it has a really cool solo. The tempo is a little faster. He does some really cool vocal things that he doesn't do on the studio version. It's just a much stronger version of that song. But the album I had mostly showcased their kind of like 80s rock, kind of like butt rockish kind of stuff. Which is fine. Like I don't think that Judas Priest has many songs that are outright bad. But if I had had a chance to hear, you know, fucking Painkiller, Heading Out to the High, not hit, fucking Jawbreaker, The Sentinel, you know, so on and so forth, I think I would have been like, oh my God, this is, I like this at least as much as Maiden, if not more. So it took a while. I was well into adulthood before I decided to like actually fucking take them seriously. So that's more or less my story. And honestly, the first thing I ever heard about them was not their music. It was Rob Halford coming out as gay, which at the time I thought was incredibly cool. And I was like, oh my God, that is very cool. And that was really my first introduction to them. Mm.
So this was after they'd broken up and the first Fight album was either about to be released or had just been released?
No, it was 2 was going to be released when he officially did it.
Ah.
Yeah. That sounds more correct. Although, I definitely don't have my dates correct.
I mean, you all along. I remember the first show I ever went to see was Priest, and it was on the Ram It Down tour. And I remember someone telling me before the show, hey, you know that guy's gay, right? And I'm a 14-year-old kid, bit of a meathead. I'm like, oh, really? And then, you know, you see that show, and I'm like, all right, who gives a shit?
Yep, that guy's gay. Oh, yeah. Well, that too.
So that was pretty, you know, that was pretty badass. So I guess, you know, who gives a shit if he's gay? You know, thank Rob Halford for not being a meathead the rest of my life.
Well, I love to hear that. And I mean, I also just one little random detail that I remember at the time was that was the year he came out was the same year that Ellen DeGeneres came out and got her show canceled for it. So I just remember thinking like, oh man, the metal community is way more tolerant and open-minded than like society writ large. That's cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like to think of the metal community as more accepting, except for the meathead.
Of course. But yeah. There's always going to be fucking, there's always going to be assholes.
Yeah.
But fact is, you know, society at large was put to the test at that point and failed, and the metal community was put to the same test and passed at that time. So that is not nothing.
Yeah. His coming out was a major milestone, and it helped me become more accepting as a person as well. Because it was like, oh, he's gay. And it was like, and then just like, you know, within weeks, I was like, oh, fuck it. Who the hell cares? It doesn't matter.
Yeah, yeah.
That makes no difference whatsoever. have you ever seen Priest live?
So I've seen Priest with Ripper Owens, and I've seen Halford in his solo band.
Okay.
But I don't think that I've ever seen, to my knowledge, I've never seen Priest with Halford.
Where did you see the Owens lineup?
I saw them in San Francisco with at a venue called the Warfield. If any San Franciscans are listening to this right now,
I have been to the Warfield. I used to live on the peninsula.
It's like honestly, pretty mid-sized compared to like the venues they'd be playing now, or at the height of their career. And then I think I saw Halford at a smaller place. I think I saw him at a place called the Phoenix. I did see him opening for Iron Maiden too, I kind of saw both of them when they were sort of two incomplete pieces. But I think by the time they started playing, as Priest with Halford, I think that's when like I was kind of out of. Less interested in arena shows and more interested in the underground, like that was definitely my death metal period. That was definitely my seeing local bands all the time and being more excited about that than national acts. And so I think it just never fell into place to happen.
Yeah, totally fine. I'm holding no judgment on that. That was more just a curiosity.
They got a leg booked right now for the East Coast with Sabaton. If that makes it to the West Coast, I'm gonna drag you out to that one.
I am never not that like Sabaton is honestly one of my favorite bands. I would definitely go to that.
Yeah, I'm mad that there's not a West Coast leg yet. Quite frankly, they need to get out.
Didn't they already play with Sabaton like a year or so ago?
No, it was a couple of years ago. That was the tour where Faulkner's heart blew up. And so they didn't make it out here on that one. And then they eventually came back. But I think it was at that point on the makeup tour, it was Queensryche opening.
Yeah.
Hmm. Oh, okay.
Well, all right.
That's cool. Yeah.
So, you did a cover of Tornado of Souls.
We did.
How did you approach doing Dave Mustaine's vocals, but with skill, talent?
I mean, I wouldn't put it that way. I think Dave has his own skill set. Well, first, we do it a step lower. Even if I was trying to imitate Dave to the closest extent that I was capable of, it still wouldn't be that really high nasally sound that he gets on that song.
Yep.
But really, I've just always found that the more you try to imitate a singer, the worse the result is. So when you're covering a song, you need to just get it out of your head that the goal is to sound like the original and just know that the goal is to sound like you.
Okay. Did you have to change any of the vocal phrasings or blast into it?
I grew up on Megadeth. Megadeth was like my favorite band for years and years and years. So I have a lot of the way Dave goes about his phrasing just sort of encoded in my genetic, in my mental synapses. And also I think I was influenced by punk early on, and Dave Mustaine was clearly also influenced by punk. So I think we've sort of got that in common. That song came pretty naturally to me.
Okay. Rustin, I didn't mean to besmirch Dave too bad.
Oh, of course.
Rest in Peace is one of my favorite fucking albums. It
oh, yeah.
is a classic from start to finish. I even like Dawn Patrol. I think that the original yeah. Dawn Patrol, not the remaster.
Oh no! So, fuck all the re-recordings, all the remixes, all the remasters, all that shit. I don't listen to any Megadeth except the originals. Except Killing Is My Business, that re-recording is fine.
It
everything else, nope.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Good. So saying that, it is. You kept the ferocity of Tornado of Souls.
Thank you.
And Dave is spitting venom throughout that entire song in his own inimitable way. And I'm impressed that you were able to keep that level of intensity while still sounding sounding like a singer, not just somebody who is snarling through a song.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, personality has always been something that's been very important to me. Like, it's important to me that whatever I'm singing, the listener feel and not just hear. And that's kind of something that's sort of something where I feel like the power metal genre and I kind of part ways on. Like, there are a lot of really intense lyrics in power metal that are just not served by sort of the lightness that the vocal delivery gets. I think you could kind of say that about Dave Mustaine as well. Like, you have to learn how to recognize his aggression. I think, like, the first time I heard this, it was just like, what is this high-pitched nasally bullshit? And then, you know, you familiarize yourself with his personality and who he is and how he goes about things, and then you're like, oh yeah, that is him sneering, that is him angry and pissed off. So I don't know. Yeah. I really try to tap into the feel as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, brother. I really appreciate hearing that. Like, yeah, I'm very appreciative whenever people have nice things to say.
No problem. It was, like I said, not a power metal fanboy.
Yeah.
It is interesting to occasionally find those hidden gems. I bet, as a Russell Allen fan, you must be familiar, and Tobias Sammet, you must be familiar with Aeron, the Dutch.
Aeron?
Yeah, that's it. Thank you.
Of course. Yep.
And via that, so The Source I find to be a perfect album. There's nothing wrong with The Source. It is just an ideal encapsulation of music. And Russell
Allen's
on that.
I don't think I know that album. Yeah, okay. Yeah. The album with Russell Allen, I don't know as well. I also don't know the album with Hansi Kirsch as well. I really know, like The Human Equation is the album I've spent the most time with, and everything before that to a lesser extent.
Okay.
I'll listen to that album as well, the Tad Moreau song and that.
Yeah, listen to Tad Moreau song. That is the most, I don't know, I don't want to say similar to you, but it that riff is just grindy and nice. So let me know what you think of that. But on the Source album, and I don't know why I was going to go here, but I'm just going to go there and see where it takes us. There was I found a band called Circus Maximus, and I can't think of the singer's name.
I've heard of
them. But
that,
they are a very progressive-ish. I think they're from Scandinavia somewhere. And so when I was mentioning earlier that the Priestess of the Dark Tower, that's not the right name.
Dark Paradise.
Yes, that's it. It sounded progressive. That's what actually I was thinking of it. That
okay. You know,
that song was like, it would sound right done by, they would have, it sounds like something they would have done in that,
okay.
that progressive type manner. So, all right. It has been about an hour and
like 40 minutes.
Yeah. Well, 40 minutes with
something
you.
Like
it's been another 20 minutes me and Matt.
I'm so fucking sorry.
It's totally fine. I really, really liked talking to you.
Oh, yeah. God, I'm fucking so embarrassed. Like, I would say that's so unlike, I would say that it's so unlike me to forget something like that, but that's not at all true. I'm extremely unintelligent and I'm constantly having things fall out of my head. Well, that's exactly like something that I would do.
I found that the better the musician, the dumber the person. So
we'll take it.
Awesome.
Or at least forgetful. I should say forgetful, not dumb.
No, yes. Dumb. Maybe in other cases.
All I can say, but, Chris Barnes never missed an interview, Devin.
You know, my proudest moment on Twitter is telling Chris Barnes that his vocal performance sounds like somebody shoving an omnidirectional mic up their ass, and he blocked me for it.
Well done. I think half of metal Twitter has been blocked by Chris Barnes, and the other half just didn't try.
He actually follows me. We're old friends. I like Chris. I know, you know, people have their issues, but I've always gotten along with them. So,
well, if you hear this, Chris, I'm sure you're a perfectly nice guy.
I used to, when I was a kid, shoot my BB gun at him when he was riding his dirt bike on the railroad tracks by my house.
Oh, you really like knew him.
Yeah. He was my God.
My
brother's age. But then, yeah, one of the first things I did at Metal Blade was the publicity for The Bleeding. And I had him and Alex Webster come into the office and do nothing but interviews for a week straight.
Wow. That's badass.
Yeah. Actually, they took me on their tour bus, 6 feet under, just for 2 days, but it was pretty cool falling asleep on a tour bus and waking up in another city.
Yep. That's my favorite. Walking out of the tour bus and looking around and being like, I have no idea where I am.
For me, it was outside of the whiskey, but still.
All right. So thank you so much for coming on our little podcast.
Thank you for having me,
Devin.
I really appreciate it as well, man. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
And Matt, it was an absolute pleasure talking to you. You have been a very, very good friend of mine on Twitter, and your input and your interaction has been extremely valuable to me. So thank you very much, dude.
Appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks. So that's this week's episode of the Judas Priest cast. Tune in next week when Jay comes back. He had a bit of a birthday party to attend for his grandkids. So wish his kids a happy birthday, his grandkids a happy birthday, and I'll see you guys next week.
See ya.